Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 303 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host once again. And today I have two guests. I have Lauren Lester and Jessica Bednarz. And Lauren is an attorney operating outside of Denver, Colorado, and has a client-based law firm focusing on family law principally, but a couple of other things as well. And it's really interesting how she structured her law firm to be client-centered and to take full advantage of the limited scope opportunities and productize the packaging of legal services to meet her client needs. Now, at the same time, Jessica Bednarz formerly was working with the Chicago Bar Association and then went on to work for the Chicago Bar Foundation, and she works in the incubation program, leading that program for CBF, and helped to turn out new law firms that get away from the billable hour model and are doing kind of the same thing that Lauren was doing with her practice in Colorado. Well, now they've teamed up and, amongst other things, are offering some services and resources known as on-purpose legal services. And I think it's a fascinating mixture of the two. And I hope you enjoy hearing about it as much as I did learning. So without any further delay, here is Lauren Lester and Jessica Bednarz. Lauren Lester and Jessica Bednarz, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you. We're so excited to be here.
All right, let's start with Lauren, and then we'll follow up with Jessica. Lauren, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Absolutely. I'm Lauren Lester. I am a lawyer based out of Denver, Colorado. I have a client-centered practice that really helps clients through some of the most significant moments of life, birth, death, marriage, and divorce. And so I have built my practice. I've been in practice for 6 years now. I built it right out of law school. So law is a second career for me. And I was in the web development space prior to becoming a lawyer for about a decade. So used that experience that I had and that business mind that I had to launch this practice, because as I was thinking about having my own practice and what my goals were, I realized that the traditional way that a lot of lawyers I talked to were working wasn't going to work for me. So I sort of did this experiment to see if I could make it work. And 6 years later, I'm still here and I'm really proud to be able to share my story and hope that it inspires others to build a practice that they love.
Well, it's tremendous. And we want to get into the nuts and bolts of what makes your practice different from many others. But before we do that, Jessica, let's hear from you about your journey through life and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. So again, I'm Jessica Bednarz. I'm the Associate Director of Innovation and the Justice Entrepreneurs Project, which is our legal incubator program at the Chicago Bar Foundation. So my work kind of falls into two buckets, an innovation bucket, which includes me ensuring that the CBF has a culture of innovation, and then also leading special projects that advance innovation in the practice of law. And then on the other bucket, it's our legal incubator program, which is called the Justice Entrepreneurs Project, which is a program that helps lawyers start innovative and socially conscious law practices targeting the middle income population. And I oversee all aspects of that program. Prior to that, I did have my own practice right out of law school way back in 2009. And it was focused on family law. This was before we had our legal incubator program and before CBA had the robust law practice management division that it did. So I was trying to figure things out on my own. I eventually went on to get some more practice experience at a smaller family law firm. I then worked for the CBA for a bit, the Chicago Bar Association, and then finally moved over to the Chicago Bar Foundation, which I really, really enjoy. The position I'm in now is a great opportunity for me to combine my interest in business. I have an undergraduate degree in business with my interest in access to justice. And I really enjoy working with lawyers like Lauren, who are trying to start these practices, helping people and doing things differently. And I'm sure we'll talk more about that in a sec.
Absolutely. So one of the things I find kind of interesting in the two of you is you both started a legal practice straight out of law school. And I find that kind of interesting and refreshing. I felt like when I came out of law school, for a lot of the people I went to school with, that starting their own practice was going to be the only way that they were going to be able to, you know, practice their trade and pay off all these enormous debts that they had. And I felt like the law schools did a woeful job of preparing them for that process. And so in part, that's why we have this podcast today, to address the question, what they didn't teach us about running a business in law school, which is darn near everything. So I'm interested that the two of you didn't see that as a barrier. You jumped right in. Now, Lauren, in your case, you had a background in web development, so that maybe gave you a sense. And Jessica, I'm interested to hear your rationale for going into practice straight out of law school as well. But Lauren, let's start with you. What motivated you to, you know, leap off that gangplank straight out of school?
Sure. So my driving forces were twofold. One, I wanted the freedom to be able to have a business and a professional career that I built. And then I wanted the flexibility. At the time, I had my long-term partner, who's now my husband. We didn't have kids yet, but it was in the short distance for us. And so I knew that working 90 hours a week and never seeing my family was not something that I wanted to do. It was important to me to have that family time. So I thought, okay, how can I build something up now, so when we're ready to expand our family, it can support that lifestyle? So those are my driving forces. And having been working in the web development space, I was a project manager. I'd seen that business firsthand. I felt like I had the business acumen that I needed, which you're absolutely right, was not taught in law school. I was fortunate enough to take one class and my final semester, which I think gave me the confidence to know that I could do it at my law school. But that was, you know, one class. I think it was the only class that was offered. And I was lucky to be one of the 15 who got in. And that really was the impetus to say, okay, you know what, I think I can do this. You know, I could always fall back. I always knew I could go get a job at a firm. So I had a safety net, but I wanted to give it a shot so that I could build something, like I said, that I wasn't running myself into the ground, and that I could have the freedom to make it more of a business. I love the business of law probably more than I love the practice of law. Yeah. And I didn't want to be shoved into, you're an associate, we do it this way. You know, you don't ask questions, you just follow our rules. Even if I thought, you know, I think there might be a better way to do this. I'm always sort of challenging the status quo. And I thought, you know, at least let me try and see if it could work rather than go somewhere and work where I almost knew I would probably hate it just because of how the structure was. So I thought, let me give this other option a chance.
I tell this story often, that one of my classmates was telling me that he had gotten an offer from a big firm here in Washington, D.C., and he was marveling at the fact that they had overnight quarters in the building and dry cleaning services and an entire set of, you know, kitchen and chef services. And I asked him, well, you know, why? Right? Because they expect you to live there. And right. they don't want you to go home. Oh, that was a bit of an eye opener. But anyway, Jessica, let me ask you same question. What motivated you to go into practice straight out of law school?
Yeah, for me, it was, I'm going to say, also out of necessity. And I say also because, as Lauren was talking, it kind of demonstrates how there are, you know, only a few paths to create or to achieve your goals out of law school. And we'll talk more about that in a second. But out of necessity. So I graduated 2009, which was a really awesome time to graduate from law school because it was right around the financial crisis and there were just no jobs to be had. So while I had some really great experiences in law school, clerking at firms and for a judge, et cetera, you know, I was interviewing for a lot of family law jobs and I was getting beat out by people who had several years of experience because they were getting laid off from firms, et cetera.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we could kind of see this on the horizon coming into my third year. And I was in the family law clinic at DePaul University, which is where I went to law school. And our professor was encouraging us to consider going out on our own, or at least to do that and take on some cases while looking, because who knew how long it was going to take to, you know, get the jobs that we actually wanted.
Wise advice.
Yeah. So, and she was very supportive. She said she was a solo practitioner herself. She said, hey, you know, I can mentor you. I can provide you my office space. You know, I can do whatever I can to help you decrease the expenses and help you feel more comfortable in the practice side of it. And because I had the business degree, the business side of it actually didn't worry me that much at all, because I had a foundation. I liked the idea of entrepreneurship, and that was something I actually wanted to do down the road. It just, I didn't want to do it right out of law school simply because I felt like I actually needed more practice experience. And that's right. What I really wanted to gain. But, you know, with her advice and encouragement, I did go ahead and hang a shingle and take on some clients and some cases. And I was able to reach out to her and other more experienced practitioners to help fill those gaps. And I did that for probably a couple of years. And then finally, I was able to move over to a family law firm to gain that experience that I wanted to gain. But at that point in time, I was starting to realize that litigation just really wasn't my jam. Right. And right. I just didn't feel like, I didn't like the litigation aspect, but also I just didn't feel like I was solving a lot of problems. So I started to explore other opportunities and just try to understand what else I could do with these two degrees. And that's when I started getting really involved in the Chicago Bar Association. And through that, I learned about the Chicago Bar Foundation and what they did. And yeah, the rest is kind of history.
So Lauren, you were saying that when you created your firm and when you embarked on that path, you wanted to create a firm that was a little different from those that you'd seen around you, that was a little more client-centered. And I know from reviewing your website that you take a different approach to providing those legal services or a spectrum of legal services to your client base. Tell us a little bit about what the challenges were before you and why you structured your law firm the way you did. And what is that structure?
So I first looked around, as I think anyone starting a business would do, what other firms were doing. And it was pretty similar, right? Everyone sort of had the billable hour model and they would take a retainer and it was a one size fits all. You know, if we practice in this area, this is how we run these cases. And so that felt off to me, but I thought, okay, well, you know, that seems to be working for all these folks. So maybe that is the way to go. But when I started digging in more and actually getting numbers on things, I realized that I could not be a client if I ran a firm like that. And that to me was a moment, a sort of aha moment that I thought, I can't in good conscience build a business that I couldn't even be a client of. And so I thought, okay, if I'm looking, you know, to have a marital agreement drafted, or I need to get divorced, or I need to set up my estate plan, you know, what would I look for? And I am a little bit more on the DIY side of the spectrum. And so that's what gave me the idea of, you know, what if I limited the scope and talked to folks and found, you know, the handful of people in Colorado who were doing some of that to see how it would work from a business perspective. And I thought, you know, if somebody wants to take a stab at drafting their marital agreement, but they want to have a lawyer review it just to make sure it's good, you know, could I offer that service and how could I do that profitably? Or, you know, if somebody was going through a divorce and they were rather amicable with their co-parent or their spouse, you know, how can I not add fuel to the fire? How can I just help them get through the process that continues to encourage them to work together, even though they obviously don't like each other, given the situation that they're in? And so that's where the limited scope aspects came from. And I started to play around with the different service levels, from literally just one-off services to, okay, somebody's coming through for a divorce, you know, they're going to need these 10 things. So how could I bundle those together in a way that made it easier for the consumer to say, yeah, I want that package, versus I have to choose these 10 tasks, which I have no idea about because I've never gone through a divorce. So I tried to always come at it from the consumer's point of view and the client's point of view, as if I was them and what would make sense to me. And so I built it that way. And there's been several iterations over the last 6 years, but it's in a good spot probably for the last 2 years or so, where potential clients understand They like having the options. They like being able to choose a spectrum of, you know, I want to do some of it myself, or I'm really busy. I've got two kids and, you know, I need to go through this divorce and I work full time. Can you just handle it? And so sometimes I have folks who, you know, that's what their value is they just don't want it on their plate, but they can choose what level of service works best for them. And then on the pricing side, it was always just, you know, I can't write a blank check. I can't write a retainer and cross my fingers and hope to God that's the next time that the last time that they're going to ask me for money, which we all know is typically not the case. So I thought, you know, it's got to be flat fee. And so how can I figure out a way to be able to tell these potential clients, no, this is the cost and this is what you get from it. So it just really came out of putting myself in the potential client's shoes and thinking, what would I want, and building a practice around that.
Well, I know from looking at your website, for instance, in the divorce and custody space, you have three levels of support. And, you know, without, you know, going into too much detail, what I like about it, I guess this is probably owing to your history as a web developer, because you said the way you've presented what's included in each level of support and the pricing for each level of support reminds me very much of if you're buying, for instance, an application for your computer or phone. You can buy three levels of service, and you've got the matrix set up so people can compare and contrast and see exactly where do I fall on this spectrum. And in one case, it's a monthly fee, and in another case, it's a fixed fee, and other cases, it's kind of the platinum or the standard. So I think that's really an innovative approach to both presenting the level of services that you offer and, you know, the pricing of it.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. And I think it's always funny. And I certainly take the compliment with a lot of humility, but I always find, you know, I didn't come up with that. Like you said, if you buy any other software, that's typically how they present it. So I think where a lot of attorneys struggle, and where I think I have set myself apart, not in a boastful way, but I just don't, when it comes to the business side, I don't think like a lawyer. And I go and say, you know, I really like shopping at this store, or, you know, my experience buying that software was really great. What did they do that made it so great? And trying to incorporate that into my law practice. And that's absolutely one of, you know, I can't take credit at all for the tiered approach, because that's very standard in the software web development business, but it works. I mean, there's a reason that they use it.
No, absolutely. And I think it really gives a clear picture to the potential client. Well, I have a spectrum of services here and I can tailor it to meet my exact needs. One of the challenges I think we all addressed when the prospect of limited scope representation came into play around the country is just how do I structure that limitation? And to what degree am I responsible for the actions of the client vis-a-vis the products that they're generating? And I think this does a really great job of laying it out. Now, I'm assuming that you have a tailored retainer agreement for each of those tiered services that reflects those choices.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's a open and honest conversation with every potential client on what I will be responsible for given the scope and what they're going to be responsible for. And starting that from, you know, really the first conversation, but that's absolutely memorialized in the engagement agreement. And I've never had a client misunderstand that or think that I was going to do something that they, you know, they are actually responsible for. So really just having that open dialogue and saying it in a way that makes sense to them is been the key. And but absolutely, they understand where that line is.
Today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you in part by my friend, Coach Mark Rockwell. Now, if that name sounds familiar, you might remember hearing him as our guest on episode 277 of The Law Entrepreneur. And during that episode, we talked about a lot of different things. And one of is the fact that, did you know that only 12% of the law schools provide instruction on how to operate a law firm? 12%. That's one of the reasons managing a firm is difficult for most attorneys, particularly if they have no prior business education or experience. Wouldn't it be great if someone could guide you and save you the time and money figuring out how to grow and manage a profitable firm? Well, I highly recommend you visit with my friend, Coach Mark Rockwell. Mark helps individual attorneys, as well as law firm leadership teams, implement the structure and processes they need to grow and operate profitably. As a lawyer and a businessman, Mark knows firsthand what it's like to face the challenges of growing a profitable firm. Mark can help you do the same. Go to his website, coachrockwell.com, and download the Law Firm Checkup. That's Law Firm Checkup, which Mark will review with you at no cost. You'll get great insights on how to build a healthy, thriving law firm. You can call Mark directly at 503-784-7205 or visit his website at coachrockwell.com. That's coachrockwell.com. And my thanks to him personally for sponsoring today's episode. If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. Do you get a sense from doing this that there's less friction when it comes to being retained?
I think so. I think the clients feel they are in a lot more control and us in a place of empowerment. Where when they call other traditional firms, it's, you know, this is our retainer, you pay that, and then how we work is how we work. So I think when they come to see that they have options, and, you know, we're not known as a profession of, you know, necessarily making things more streamlined or less conflict, right? I mean, we are in an adverse possession, our adverse profession, that I think a lot of folks, especially in these, you know, very sensitive divorce, marriage, you know, birth, child custody topics, they don't want to do that. They don't want to make it worse. They just need to get something formal. And so having an option where they feel like they still maintain control to do that is really important to them.
Well, one of the things I think that you've adequately described and implemented in your tiered approach is that time when people come to us and say, I need you to review something, or I need you to hold my hand through something. And I know so many attorneys are kind of hesitant, like, I'm either all in or I'm out, you know, and I don't know how I would structure a hold my hand kind of relationship, or I got better things to do than review somebody else's work, and particularly if it's pro se work. But that's not how clients think.
Correct. No. And they want some help. And oftentimes they can either not afford the full representation, but they know something is better than nothing. And I think I absolutely agree. I'm sure a lot of our judicial officers across the country would agree. And then, you know, sometimes even if they can't afford it, that's just not where they want to spend their money. Because they, you know, if they're on the DIY spectrum like me, and they're used to saving some funds by doing it themselves, you know, they want to be able to do that. And again, I've never had anyone not understand, you know, okay, I'm just going to review this document and give you feedback. Here's the cost. And I've built the cost in a way that provides value to the client, but also works for my business. And it's been a really successful service offering because you're right. They want to get that double check, that peace of mind and that reassurance, but they don't necessarily need our help the whole way.
Now, before we go much further, by the way, I love that I'm on the spectrum, the DIY spectrum.
Yes. Yeah. A new one for us to consider.
I like that. Before we kind of go on with that a little bit more, I want to bounce over to Jessica here a little bit and ask Jessica, in your function there with the foundation in Chicago, Bar Foundation, on the incubator program, do you see more and more attorneys that are contemplating their starting their own practice, starting off with this whole kind of idea of the, for lack of a better phrase, the commoditization of legal services?
Yeah, definitely. Our program was built around some of the guiding principles that Lauren was just talking about. So our program launched in 2013, so quite a while ago at this point. And some of the guiding principles were to do things like unbundle legal services when it made sense to do so. So we provide a lot of training on that to our incubator attorneys at the outset of the program. And we've developed resources ourselves for attorneys and for others that are free on the Chicago Bar Foundation website. We have a whole toolkit on limited scope representation, which includes a sample engagement agreement. Other guiding principles, we're doing things like offering set fees. So we are against the billable hour in our program, probably no surprise. And our attorneys don't bill by the hour. They offer set fees. It's a requirement to be in the program and to continue to be a part of that network.
Interesting. Yeah, that's really interesting. You make it a part of the requirement to stay in the incubator program or to be in.
Yes. Yep, exactly. And we know that a lot of our attorneys are doing these things. For sure, the pricing piece of it, because we do check in with our attorneys on an annual basis just to see how they're doing, but we collect data too. And over 90% of our attorneys in our network, and we're at about 60 attorneys in our network right now, over 90% of them offered unbundled services in 2020. That's our most recent information. And we also collect information on pricing, like the different fee structures they offer. And because we know that's, you know, that can be a challenging thing to do if you don't have a lot of resources to guide you. That's another thing we offer a lot of training on at the Bar Foundation. And that's why we created our initial toolkit in 2016, our initial pricing toolkit. And that's the reason that the CBF collaborated with On Purpose Legal to update that recently, because we've learned a lot over the past 5 years. So.
Well, I told you during our pre-call that I routinely shake my fist at bar associations for the lack of support that they give to attorneys who want to start their own practice. But one of the areas around the country that I think does a great job is there in Chicago, the Chicago Bar Association and the foundation that goes along with it. They're really cutting edge as far as I can tell. Now, maybe it's just my own ignorance, but I've talked to a lot of attorneys over the last 5 years, a lot of people associated with bar programs and incubator programs. And frequently I see the incubator program is saying, hey, we're going to help you start a practice that looks like every other practice in the jurisdiction.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not really forward thinking. And it doesn't seem to me to be helping the process much. So I really encouraged by, you know, the approach that you're doing there at CBA and the CB Foundation. So then let's come back around over to Lauren and then get to On Purpose Legal Services. At some point, you also then took what you've learned through this whole process and started to generate some takeaways that potential clients could use to guide them through this process. I'm assuming this was also to help in the relationship between you and the client. So the legal guides that you have developed, tell me how they came about and how you structured them and how you put them to use.
So they absolutely came out of just working through the process with clients and really being open to identifying what questions and services I was being asked to do a lot of. And if I felt like, man, I feel like I'm answering the same question 20 times a day. Like, I am very much a efficiency junkie. Mm-hmm. So anytime I get that voice in my head of like, there's got to be a faster way to do this, there's got to be a more efficient way. The culmination of the two of those is really what inspired Law Guides, because I found that I was answering the same questions just about the process. It's basic information that the everyday consumer just doesn't know or understand. And then I thought, you know, I was going to put it out just for my clients. So if they were to work with me, it was just a way for me to say, you know what, I'm not going to send you an email with that information. Go to the site. You've got everything, but I'll be here in whatever level of support you've signed up for. And once I built it, I went, man, you know, there might be folks out here who just need this information, because the courts here in Colorado are fantastic and they provide a lot of pro se resources, but they're written by the courts. And so even they are, you know, sometimes confusing, and sometimes I read them and know what's happening and think, do I have it right? Because the way they wrote that is a little bit off. So I thought, how can I, you know, I wrote this in a very client-centered way and in words that were plain English and helped them understand the process. Why, maybe I should just provide this to the general public. So if somebody wanted to go through the divorce or custody process on their own, but just wanted to make sure they checked all the boxes and all the forms they were using were the right forms, they could come to this site for this resource. So that was sort of the journey of Law Guides, and have put it out there, and folks who have used it have found it tremendously helpful. There's videos, there's all the forms that they need. Like I said, everything's explained in a little bit more plain language, but the folks can go through the entire process themselves. And again, it just takes out you know, that conflict. And while I don't feel like I'm an attorney who adds to the conflict, I think as a profession, that's very much our reputation. So there are folks out there who just, they don't want lawyers involved. And this is just a resource for them to know that they're not going to miss anything as they go through the divorce or custody process.
You know, as a reformed litigator and a former family law attorney, I can see this need just, you know, firsthand. There are, you know, plenty of couples who were on a level of communication that allowed them to work through these processes on their own. And if they just had a little more guidance.
Right.
And sadly, what often happened is that lack of guidance became the obstacle to them being able to craft a result that suited them the way they intended. And then, you know, you'd be following behind them to try and pick up the pieces and fix the problem after the, you know, horse was out of the barn. And I often thought, man, if they just had a little more guidance on the front end, they were set for success, and they snatched defeat from the jaws of victory.
Absolutely. Yeah, I see it all.
So I can see how this is, would be a tremendous resource. And the fact that you've put it online, I'm going to say obviously, it may not be obvious, but obvious to me, that again, that harkens back to your web development background. And now you've got these videos integrated with text-based explanations linked to the proper forms. It really is, you know, the guide to DIY. Mm-hmm. Family matters, yeah?
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah.
And it'd be a shame for you to just limit that to your clients.
Right. Yeah. And it really is just kind of staying open. I think, you know, all of us entrepreneurs and even in running law firms, you know, just staying open to those opportunities when they come up and not immediate. I think as lawyers, we just are so trained to be so risk averse that it's like, oh my God, would I open this to just in a general public? I'm not going to work with these people. And it was like, take a step back and go, no, it's just information. There's very clearly disclaimers everywhere, right? There's no attorney-client relationship, but the folks who have come through and used it, like you said, they just needed that guidance and it made the process so much better for them, especially when they have kids and they have to continue to work together, even if their marriage is no longer worked out. It really does set them up for, I think, long-term success in a way that it wasn't a ton of work, and I'm not involved at all half the time. So they're just doing it on their own.
Well, before we circle back to Jessica here, let me ask you, how do you respond to the question that your guide is taking work away from young, you know, baby lawyers who could use that case?
Yeah. So in Colorado, the number is a little bit different depending on who is generating it, but we have a huge number of pro se litigants in family law cases. And I would suspect that that's probably pretty similar across the country.
Across the board, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, if there are 70 to 80% of cases every year have at least one pro se litigant, I don't think there are enough attorneys, to be honest, to serve them, at least in a way that they need to be served. So if someone has a traditional practice, they're not touching that market. So it's an untapped market. And I think I'm getting a piece of it, but I certainly think there's a lot of room for other practitioners to come in and serve this market that's just underserved in a way that works for them. And that's where the rub is that attorneys come in and think, well, I'll just practice in the traditional way, but I don't want to cut my fees. They just assume that I'm just cheaper. And that's not the case.
That's not the case at all. And I would argue that from the court's perspective, that this helps.
Absolutely.
Because it helps that pro se litigant do a better job. The pro se litigant wasn't going to hire the new baby lawyer anyway, typically.
Most likely, yeah.
Otherwise, they would have already done that. Mm-hmm. You know, so just having a resource that goes beyond, you know, what the court site does, say, here's a pamphlet and here's the list of
forms.
Yeah. Okay. That the one that takes that next step and actually provides interactive information, I think makes the court's job easier in the long run.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've gotten a lot of feedback, and I think Jessica has too, from judicial officers who can tell that somebody has gotten, one of the parties in front of them has gotten some help, and man, what a difference it makes. Yeah. Because, you know, the court doesn't, we're a no fault state. You know, they don't care that the other party was a jerk to them. Like, they need to go through these factors, and having someone who knows that and can provide evidence and testimony, I mean, man, what a difference that makes.
So Jessica, how did all this experience and this knowledge gained between the two of you, how did this result in this venture, On Purpose Legal Services? And tell us what that means.
Yeah, so On Purpose Legal, I think basically what we're trying to do is we're trying to take everything that we've learned and we're trying to get more people to do it and to help more lawyers. As we've talked about during this podcast, there are a lot of people in the United States, just the average American has a really hard time accessing affordable legal services. That's on the public side. On the private side or on the practitioner side, we know that a lot of practitioners are struggling. They're not as profitable as they once were, if they're even profitable right now. We know that there seems to be this perception that you have to either make a choice, either you're going to have this successful practice and career where you make some money, but you're going to have to give up, you know, your personal life and not really focus on your well-being. And we think that's totally wrong. So what we're trying to do is create resources, which we can talk about more in a second, these modern tools for lawyers so that they can create these practices, these modern practices that are client-centric, they're profitable, and at the same time, they also support their well-being. Because at the end of the day, we want the legal profession to remain healthy and relevant. The legal profession plays a really important part in society. But if we don't make these changes as a profession, we're going to become less relevant because people are going to find other ways to resolve their legal situation. So we don't want that. We think, and we know there's a lot of research out there that shows when people actually have access to an attorney, they have better outcomes. So we want to help lawyers create practices that are profitable, that are valuable to legal consumers, and that also support their well-being. So that's what we're really trying to do. And we're doing some of that already in the incubator space and in my incubator program, for example. But, you know, we're just based in Chicago and, you know, we want to help people everywhere. There aren't incubator programs everywhere.
No, there are not.
We want people to have access to these resources.
And they're not all created equal either.
No.
So tell us a little bit about the services and products that are embodied in this approach.
Yeah, so we have a variety of things. So the first thing that we actually started out with and we want to return to eventually is a workshop that was focused on professional development specifically for legal professionals. And it really was based in this idea that, you know, you don't have to choose. You really can create a career path that meets all of your goals. So it focused on kind of starting with your purpose. You know, why did you come to the legal profession in the first place? What really gets you out of bed in the morning? And then using that and then kind of taking a deep dive into your professional identity and really your essence, we took that, we built on how to set and achieve goals, how to build resilience and also habits for success, kind of combining all of those together to help people really create a roadmap for reaching goals, including career goals and creating career paths. So that was kind of our first service, if you will. And we did that in person. Seems so long ago, back in January 2020, which is pre-pandemic. And we really had a good response, and that's something we want to return to. We just don't want to do it right now during the pandemic because it's just, right. The experience is not the same online. So that was the first iteration or the first service that we offered. And more recently, what we've been focusing on is pricing, because we really do think moving away from the billable hour is going to solve a lot of problems, both on the lawyer and the client ends. So what Laura and I have been spending a lot of time on these past 6 months is creating a more robust version of the pricing toolkit. So the CBF came out with an initial version back in 2016, which was a great resource at the time, especially given the dearth of resources for value-based pricing in the legal profession. But we've learned a lot, and Laura and I have since met and talked about our experiences. And we've used all of that to update the pricing toolkit and create a more concrete framework that people can walk through, and literally a step-by-step framework with a worksheet and everything where they can walk through and come up with a value-based pricing menu. The toolkit also has a lot of tips. It has templates like engagement agreement clauses, things like that, that we think are going to be really helpful for people and really provide a roadmap for how to value-based price. And you can get that access to that resource. It's free. It's at thepricingtoolkit.com. And once you're there, you'll also see that you could register for a video series, which is essentially the pricing toolkit in a web video-based form.
Well, that's great because, again, one of the drawbacks that people have to starting with these limited scope, fixed price services, they have no idea how to price them, nor would they. You know, it's something new. And this gives them kind of the structure and roadmap, as you say, to work through that process based on some results that you've gathered over the course of time, and gives them at least a starting point.
Yes, exactly. So we launched it a couple of weeks ago. We've gotten good feedback so far. We would love it if any of your audience members downloaded it and worked through it. And we're always here to answer questions because we really believe in this way of practicing law.
And tell me, where do you think then the future of on-purpose legal services is heading? Is this going to be what do you think the future is for this service?
Great question. What do you think, Lauren?
I think, Neil, it goes back a little bit to what you said, and Jessica and I share this. You know, bar associations do some things really great, and they don't do some things really well or at all. I think it kind of fills that gap of what Jessica's experience has been, mine has been, some of our colleagues has been, is there's just not a place for these resources. So we really see on-purpose legal as being that source of information, practical tools for folks to build practices that they love, because there's just not a place for that right now. So as we get feedback from audiences and members, we will build resources to meet the needs for folks that are just not, you know, finding any information on how to do something that they want to incorporate into their practice.
Do you see that ultimately as a paid service or a paid platform, or right now is it all completely gratis, or how's that structured?
It's mostly free. We do have one paid subscription, which is our Pricing Paradise subscription for anyone who wants more hands-on help with their value-based pricing. But I think that overall, we will continue to have a good portion of it be free so that folks can just get the information that they need. But there certainly will be some add-on services to kind of take things to the next level if people are interested.
Well, Lauren and Jessica, this has been really eye-opening. I really think you are filling this need that absolutely needs to be addressed. You know, if you're a fan of the Legal Trends Report put out every year by Clio, this very much, as you said, the report validates the pathway that you were already on. And so I think it works nicely in terms of addressing the things that are there. I mean, the trends report illustrates them because they are in fact a trend. They're out there. Clients and potential clients are having these needs that have gone unfulfilled by the legal community. And here you are, you've been fulfilling those in a way that's really innovative and resourceful. So congratulations to you both. Lauren and then Jessica, tell our audience how they might reach out to you if they want to follow up on anything you've had to offer today.
Absolutely. So you can reach me, Lauren Lester, at my practice website, which is mylifelawyer.com, and alternatively also adifferentpractice.com, which is our website for on-purpose legal.
And Jessica?
Yep. Same thing for on-purpose legal. And then as far as the Chicago Bar Foundation goes, my bio is on the CBF website. My email address is jbednarz@chicagobarfoundation.org.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, ladies, I really did appreciate the time you shared with us today, and I look forward to having you back a little later to keep this conversation going.
Sounds great. Thanks, Neil.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Well, that will do it for today, boys and girls. I want to thank our sponsors, Ruby, long-term sponsors, Ruby Receptionist, and our newest sponsor, Coach Rockwell. And I encourage you to visit their sites and find out more about Ruby and Coach Rockwell. While you're at it, you can swing on by thelawentrepreneur.com. You see what we have going on there. If that doesn't satisfy you, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at The Law Entrepreneur. Just do a search on that. And if you'd be so kind, I would greatly appreciate it if you went to your podcast platform, wherever you are listening to us, and leave us a rating and a review if you find this is useful and informative. It does help our visibility and helps to continue to be here for you on a weekly basis, and certainly helps us keep the lights on here for another 5 years or more. So thanks again for being a listener here today on The Law Entrepreneur. Well, how about that? That's a wrap for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I'd like to thank our sponsors once again, as usual, Daylight by Market Circle, Spotlight Branding, Ruby, as in Ruby Receptionists, and our newest sponsor, Security Plus. If you have a chance, swing on by our website at www.lawentrepreneur.com. You can check out a bunch of information and resources there. And if that doesn't satisfy your needs, swing on by our Facebook page or Twitter page. You can find those just by simply searching for The Law Entrepreneur. And if you'd be so kind, I would greatly appreciate it if you go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and an honest review. If you find this podcast is helpful and that you're getting value out of it, it does help with our visibility and ensures that we're going to be there for another 5 years or so, as this has been quite the run. And I'm greatly appreciative of your interest in The Law Entrepreneur.